Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, a sleep paralysis experience mixed with a dash of the undead troubles one woman. Bizarre imagery haunts a child, but the experience is so bizarre they never found the courage to share it. Until now, and trying to prove that their home is haunted is not an easy task for one family.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You're about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. We'd love to hear your stories. Of course, you can also email your audio file. Send it to Tony, T-O-N-Y, at realghoststoriesonline.com. If you just want to record it on your recording app on your smart device. Tony and Sean joining you, and this is your first time on the air in 2019.
And feels good.
Doesn't it, though?
Feels real good.
I enjoyed Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve and Rockin' Out. It was really kind of weird how they, you know, they kind of brought him back considering he's been dead for so many years. It was strange, almost distasteful in a way, where the, you shouldn't do that with a corpse. It was just, it was inappropriate.
You know, it was a strange looking ball. We were like, 9, 8, 7. Good Lord, that's Dick Clark.
Is that a marionette they're having over there helping to count down? Oh my God, it's Dick Clark. No.
And then they just lit him up when they got down to zero. And it's interesting how you can form a dead body into a 2019, but they did it.
You took it from disturbing to, well, that's pretty messed up. You took it one step further, and bravo to you. Obviously, we are actually recording this prior to New Year's. So, who knows? Wouldn't you just be shocked to death if we're watching Ryan Seacrest, and he's like, and now my special guest. You're like, what the fuck? This is Dick Clark.
I just wanted to stay true to my New Year's resolution. Last year for 2018, it was to be awkward. And then I just kind of extended it into year two of the New Year's resolution on another level. And really, what way can you make a conversation even more awkward when it already is? Just, you know, talk about how flexible dead people are.
Just... That's a new line. The it's amazing how you can form a body into 29. Okay. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. All respect to Dick Clark. I did enjoy watching him back when it was back when he was on the air. That was, of course, always kind of a tradition.
One of the most tremendous, talented people. I mean, Casey Kasem, Dick Clark.
Yeah.
You know, you have your icon. So in all seriousness, rest in peace, sir.
Yeah.
Hope this new year is great for you up there playing golf. Whatever you're doing, hope you are enjoying it.
I do miss on New Year's Kathy Griffin and Anderson Cooper. I always enjoyed watching that program. And I know that that ended. But I don't know what to watch on New Year's anymore. I really don't, because I'm just like, I don't care about watching Ryan Seacrest. I don't care about watching Carson Daly. I don't. And last year, frankly, CNN sucked with Anderson, and I forgot who he was with. But it just it lost it. It wasn't the exciting, weird randomness. And it was kind of a kitsch, bizarre New Year's. But it was a train wreck every year. And that's what is so exciting to watch, because it was just a train wreck. And I don't know.
And you still, every year, stay up until midnight? Is that something that you do, or is it a family tradition?
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually up that late regardless. I'd usually stay up and watch it at least till 11 o'clock, you know, when they do the dropping of the ball. But it just, I don't know. I mean, I looked forward to that show, and it's just, you know, it's not the same. I hope that she comes back at some point if they can ever make that reunion, because that was a funny train wreck to watch every year. 855-853-4802, our number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to our first story. It says, hello, guys. I'm new to this amazing podcast. It was recommended by a coworker who listens to you guys. Anyways, I've had a few activities through my lifetime. I'm currently 27 years old, and I believe since I was 5 or 6, I would see things. And my story is most recent. It was about 5 years ago when things started turning for the worst. I believe in the third eye and chakras, and I believe there is something more than just heaven. But again, this is all my beliefs. I was currently living with my grandmother, and I was working at Target at the time, and my schedule would vary. One day I had to go to work at 3 p.m., so I decided I should take a nap before going to work. My grandma had a doctor's appointment that day, so the clinic bus came to pick her up early. I was home alone, and I was sleeping on my stomach. I suddenly opened my eyes because I was not able to move or even breathe. Felt like I had someone sitting on top of me. When I tried moving my head, I'd be pushed back down very aggressively. I was very scared because at this point my eyes were closed, but I'd be able to see through my third eye, which would be exactly what you see in your physical form, but you're able to see a lot more of the energy waves. Anyway, this thing was sitting on top of me. I kept battling this, trying to get it off me. I planned to turn around to see it, but every time I'd try to move, it would just push me deeper into the bed. I suddenly began to pray, and I started praying. As soon as I began to pray, I felt myself lift from under the bed and fall back down, as if whatever it was that was attacking me was lifting me up and slamming me back down. As this was happening, my prayer became more and more sloppy. I couldn't pronounce words. They just mumbled in my mind, and I was terrified. Suddenly, I pictured myself surrounded by this white light, and as soon as this happened, whatever it was on top of me left. I quickly turned to my back, and as I was doing that, my grandma's bedroom window slammed so hard it almost sounded like someone had thrown a rock. I quickly got up and was shaking. My body was trembling so hard I couldn't keep my hands still. A few hours later, my grandma returned home, and she saw how pale my face was. I tried telling her, but she is afraid of everything, so I decided to lie to her and not to tell her the truth. A few weeks later, her landlord came to do an inspection of the house, and he noticed her bedroom window had fallen from its post. He asked her what happened, and she seemed surprised because she didn't know the window had fallen. I looked at it and realized what the loud bang was. What's your guys' opinion on this? I would say that this is definitely something that was beyond sleep paralysis, considering some of the physical things that manifested themselves beyond just the experience. Your thoughts?
So whose house was she at? She was at her grandma's house?
Yeah, at grandma's house.
Has grandpa left us on Earth?
I have no idea. She said no one was there, so I'm assuming so, or he was out somewhere else.
I think that there was somebody, whether it was grandpa, whether it was another deceased relative, wanted to come over. And did she have any young siblings that passed away earlier in life? Maybe a friend at school. I think that is your token. Come on over through the window, and I'm going to sit on you. Let you up. And then, oh crap, grandma's coming back. Gotta roll.
I think that's a pretty twisted relative, if that's a relative that's showing. No, I'm not saying that can't be the case, but I mean, we all have asshole relatives that, I guess, if in death wanted to be horrible in death, could certainly be a possibility. I don't know. It seemed, just the holding down, the pushing down. I don't know that I would attribute it to a relative unless I knew more of the background of who's dead and what type of person were they. It seems I would feel like it's a little bit darker than that. Not necessarily demon, could be, but I don't know. It's difficult to say who that would be without knowing more about the background there.
I'll go friend then, because that would be kind of weird, where a random cousin that you only saw at Christmas every other year that does that. But possibly a friend, if there was somebody that she lost and just, coming back. So often that we always assume the first feeling is something bad, or somebody, a demon or a negative, opposed to, as we always say, maybe they just wanted to play. Maybe they just wanted to have a good moment, a laugh. You don't know what the hell it is, so your brain immediately goes to scared, as grandma is in this.
Yeah. Creepy story. Thank you for sharing that. 855-853-4802, our number. Next letter. Hey, guys, called on the phone line, but I now realize I left out some details and talked too fast. I just discovered your wonderful show a few months ago and hope to become an EPP soon. My story is in response to a caller the other year who, she and her sister when they were kids, encountered something in the form of a cartoon character that was trying to trap the sister in her room. I may have had a similar experience, so I didn't think it was paranormal at the time. As a kid, I sometimes had problems with stairs. One of those problems is paranormal. When I was very small, I apparently claimed there was a lady upstairs at my grandparents' house. I didn't want to go up there. We later found out that a woman did die upstairs at that house at one point. I also have relatives who were troubled enough to be haunting the place. I don't remember that person, but it was always kind of spooky. The other problem was plain old fear of heights. This alternated getting better and worse when I was little. Sometimes I'd be okay with the going downstairs slowly. Sometimes I'd crawl up them and scoot down them on my butt. My point is that stairs were kind of a source of anxiety for me. When I was 7, my dad's sister had a baby, and due to complications, she was supposed to rest at home. My mom was sort of the designated caretaker in the family, and I was out of school for the summer. So a few weeks, we'd go by, and every day mom would cook and do housework, letting my aunt rest and look after the baby. I started having a problem going up the stairs at my aunt's house, even though the nursery was up there, and I was curious about it. There hadn't been difficulties with the stairs for me in the past. They weren't as steep as the steps at my grandparents' farm, and they were carpeted, so there was less fear if you fell. My problem was that I started seeing this, what looked like cartoon wolves near the top of the stairs. Didn't exactly physically see them, but I couldn't make them go away either. They were a very specific style of cartoon, not like the wolf and the droopy dog cartoons or anything like that. They looked like a Rankin Bass animation, the makers of the old animated Hobbit and Lord of the Rings movie. They were slightly snarling and shaggy-looking heads and bodies, too thin to be real. My mother was a very practical person, and I knew I couldn't tell her I was being blocked from going upstairs by wolves. So eventually, I got the courage to edge past them on the stairs and go up there every so often. When I went down, I'd always see them on the bottom of the landing as if they were trying to keep me upstairs. By then, I figured they couldn't hurt me, or they would have done it already, so I'd edge past them again. I never saw the wolves again after that summer. Until I heard your other caller, I always thought it was just my way of working out feelings about not being the only grandchild in the family anymore. Now I wonder if it was something else. My aunt was 9 years younger than my dad, and he never really got over losing his parents' attention to a younger sibling. Maybe something, though I thought I felt that way. P.S. When I first thought about writing into you, I did a Google image search on the Rankin Bass wolves, and there are some in the Lord of the Rings movies, but they look normal, not weird and starving like the ones I saw. Thanks for everything you do. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Alexandria. You know, she's referring to a caller we had the other year, had a very similar experience where whatever they were seeing took the form of essentially of looking like a cartoon. I don't know if this is a paranormal experience or not. It's a difficult one to say because kids can manifest. I mean, anyone really can, but it's more common in kids to be able to manifest things like this in their vision and almost, you know, hallucinate to a certain extent. And when it's something almost cartoon-like, something almost, you know, very strange, and there's a lot of anxiety surrounding it, a lot of, you know, things that are going on mentally, that could very easily fall into a category of there was something mental going on that made it feel this way, and it may not be, in fact, paranormal. When I was a kid, I remember I was very anxious about seeing Thriller, the Michael Jackson music video. I loved zombies. I loved spooky stuff. But I don't think I was quite ready to watch it. I begged my parents because the only way to get it at the time was to go rent it from the video store. We didn't have cable, and it, you know, very ever, rarely ever played on TV. So we rented it, finally convinced them, and I just sat there and I watched it over and over and just freaked myself out. And then I specifically remember going to bed that night, and everyone was sitting out on the porch, me and my mom and dad. And it was like, okay, Tony, go up and get ready for bed. Walk through the kitchen, then I start heading towards the stairs that take me up to my bedroom and the bathroom and their bedroom. And I swear to you, I can still picture it in my mind. I remember seeing what looked like the zombie Michael Jackson with the red jacket standing at the top of the stairwell. And then in front of every door that I would have had to have gone to was another zombie. And this is not a dream. Yeah, and this is what I'm seeing, and I'd look away and it'd be gone, but then I'd look back and there it was, and I don't attribute it to being a paranormal experience. I attribute it to being, a 6 or 7 year old with anxiety that was untreated, and you just this stuff can happen. I'm not going to discount anything and say it wasn't paranormal with this letter, but I don't know. It's it seems to lean to me more of that sort of experience than anything else. Do you ever have anything like that?
I didn't necessarily see something in the case of stairs and needing to go above them and not wanting to go through because I see. But in my mind, they're around. Specific example, growing up, I was terrified of firefighters in the getup.
Okay.
The mask, all of the... I think the main thing was the mask.
Sure.
And so much, in fact, that there's Survive Alive House in our city where we grew up, part of the rec department, kind of a fire prevention safety. They have this mock house, and every year there's a field trip when you're in elementary school, and you go to it, and you actually are in a bedroom, and they have fake smoke, and the firefighters come in. That was fucking terrifying. Are you serious?
I remember that.
Sleeping, and there's going to be... So my mom was nice enough to allow me to be, air quotes, sick that day. And then we went to Chuck E. Cheese, and probably later in life, she probably regretted upon that. But you know what? At the time, my son is scared. He's not going to go to school. So I think in that regard, going down to the basement and putting laundry in, and this was, I want to say that I was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, but I may have been like 15, 16, where it goes... We're not judging, right? This is the comfort circle.
I'm judging more so that you went to Chuck E. Cheese at 15, 16. That's where I'm judging.
Oh, no.
Okay.
I cross-storied there. Multitasking.
Okay.
The Survive Alive House was like third grade.
Okay. That's what I thought.
But as far as the anxiety and as far as that, again, you don't necessarily need to see it or think you see it. You just have that sense.
Yeah.
Fear, anxiety. And that's, going up into my teenage years, where going down to the basement, which is scary to begin with, again, firefighters. Current day, good to go. Happy to report that they do amazing work, and no fear. But just, you throw the clothes in the dryer, and you fly up the stairs, because apparently they're going to grab you, because there's no fire. And in any event, there's a lot there.
Make
I probably
sure you
should seek counseling for it. But that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, Dick Clark. Back to you.
Make sure you clean that lint trap, because only you can prevent a dryer fire.
There was a fire. True story. This was probably 12, and I am in the living room. No joke. In the living room, putting stickers in the Topps baseball card sticker book. So obviously you have baseball cards. Well, they... also had books where you would get stickers. So they're essentially baseball cards, but they're baseball card stickers.
Yeah.
You would fill every team up throughout Major League Baseball. Sure. I am putting in a sticker, and this is very Rain Man of me, but I believe it was a Toronto Blue Jay, and I heard this curling scream from the basement of my mom, like somebody was being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
I fly downstairs. There is a very small, there's a flame in the dryer,
mm-hmm.
Must have been the lint filter.
Yeah.
Call 911. Firefighters show up. The fire marshal or the person on scene, he kind of was like, really? You really called us for this? Like, you could have taken a Windex bottle of water, one spray, and you're good.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you got kids in the house.
Yeah.
You see a flame. It's plugged in. And I don't know if that... tied into my fear, whatnot. But
not
that's
at
pretty
all.
Crazy when you hear from downstairs one of your parents sounding as though somebody's being murdered, or they're being murdered, or they're murdering someone.
Yeah. You got to talk to somebody about that.
I mean, I am right now, aren't I?
You are, yes. Yes, you are. But now... is all some things that need to be dealt with. 855-853-4802, our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Next letter says, my name is Kennedy. I currently live in Texas. I've had many paranormal experiences, but I wanted to share my first paranormal investigation of sorts. I was living in Jacksonville, Florida at the time in a school-sponsored apartment with three other girls, two to each room. So after I'd moved in, we were all hanging out and I got to go talking about paranormal stuff. And it came about the weird stuff that had been happening in the apartment that we lived in. They told me just small things like cups and whatnot being found on the floor and cabinets being opened. Well, we decided to do an overnight investigation. We set up our laptops to record the kitchen and the living room. We also took baby powder and dusted the kitchen floor. Next morning, we walked to the kitchen to find footprints in the powder. We each compared our feet to the prints and found the prints to be way too big for any of us to match. Weird off the bat. We gathered to listen and watch our recordings on our laptops. I was going through my own recording at about 1 or 2 in the morning. You can hear old school music playing. It stops and you hear what sounds like a woman talking. The talking stops and then you can hear footsteps around the living room make their way into the kitchen where our laptops were set up. It gets quiet for a second and then loudly into my laptop you hear someone cough. After that, we just find measuring spoons on the floor and our stuff randomly around the apartment. I didn't live there very long due to other circumstances, but it was weird having those experiences while I was there. Love your show. Plan to write in with more of my other experiences soon. Yeah, it certainly sounds like you caught something, as long as you narrowed down that it was not another human being. The woman, what I'm kind of curious about is what music was playing. She describes it as old school, and it seems anything past the date of, like, 2010 now is considered old school. So that could be anything from classical music to Ja Rule. So I'm wondering what was the music that was playing. Doesn't really pertain to much other than maybe that'll give us more of a sense of the age of the individual or the time window that person
so
came from.
Did you hear Nelly Ride With Me? Or was there some James Taylor in the background?
Exactly. It's like, do you want to go
narrow it down here?
Or it could be very confusing, because what if you had like a mix of like Phil Collins with Bone Thugs and Harmony, which in fact is a real song where he did a song with them. So you have like 80s mixed with early 2000s. It could be very confusing as far as what's being sampled. And that's going to be a confusing thing, I think, as they ghosts are out there. And if any of us are playing music, because so much of the music of the early 2000s and such uses so much sampling of older songs, you're going to go, oh, my God, that's like a song from the 70s. Oh, wait. Oh, my God, there's 50 Cent in that. So that can't be that. You know, it's like
you think you have it pegged as far as who could be visiting you, and then an artist from a year ago, and it blows it up entirely.
The term old school, I'm disturbed by how it's used, because it's like, that's not that old. Like, oldies used to constitute like 20, 30 years ago. At least in my, you know, when you heard oldies on the radio in the 90s when we were kids, it was like 50s and 60s music. It wasn't like 7 years ago.
I know we don't have enough time on this show, but what I would like to expand upon is the, and not just in English, language as a whole. Have we gotten to a point where we are just so bored with the words out there that we need to either A, use current words in incorrect forms, or B, we just want to have this unique identity where I'm going to make up a word, and if enough people say it, it'll become a word? Or is that just a fad? We're in the 50s, and then, you know, you move into the 70s, and there's terminology that does not make sense, and so on. From me, my perspective, aside from slang and such, and, you know, in the 90s, whether you got schooled or that's tight, yeah, or that's cold. I mean, there's every, you know, decade or so has their versions. But now more than ever, people don't particularly know how to speak, and probably because nobody actually does. It is texting, or it is through social media, or, you know, mm-hmm. what? I'm not actually going to spell that word correctly, or sentence or paragraph. Auto-correct will do it for me.
And nobody corrects anything anymore. Nobody says, don't talk like that. Like, that just, you know, it's like everyone, you know, don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, you know, or make, it's like more people need to have their feelings hurt when they're doing dumb shit. That's just kind of how I feel. I mean, I'm not saying bullying or anything like that is good. I'm just saying people need to be corrected when they're doing dumb shit. And that's the only way people correct behavior. Like, there should be more shame, because shame equates to, oh, that was a bad idea. Not on everything. I'm not saying bullying is good, because it's not. But there needs to be a little bit more shame, I think, out there to correct behavior that is not healthy and not good. I think it's what you're talking about with the sheer amount of weirdness and abbreviations, which a lot of today's language comes from texting, and the abbreviations that are used, and then people just start using it out loud. And there seems to be a plethora of it that is going on, far greater than the handful of words that a generation will come up with and use, and then it gets outdated. It's the same principle of, remember there used to be, for example, in marketing, in products, if there was a new flavor of Doritos, it was like once every 5 years or every 10 years. And it was a big deal. It's like, oh my God, look at, that's neat. That's new. Now you go to the store and every time you go, there's like 40 new flavors of Doritos. And it's like, who cares? This doesn't mean anything anymore. That's how I feel about language and all the terms and words that are just being thrown out there. It's not like one that catches on or is used. It's like every little ecosystem of people have their own way, like their own micro language. And unless you're part of that ecosystem, you're fucked. Because it's like, what are you talking about? And you can't correct them because, like, that's how we talk. Okay, that's great. Well, no one who's an adult, who's responsible, who's productive or successful will ever take you seriously. So you go ahead and you have your own little fun over there and feel special about yourselves, but you're a fucking idiot.
And what's interesting, you say there used to be five words or slangs, yeah, this or the other. It is now current day where there's five sayings or words, yeah, that are considered to be old school or yeah, you say it, perhaps, yeah, in addition to. You say a word and they look at you, people raise their eyebrow. Oh, well, aren't you
exactly
intellectual? No, I just know how to speak.
Yeah.
I just know how to say words with eye contact using proper punctuation,
yeah,
and do not speak in acronym because, you know what, this can be a fun party, but I will not inform you that it is lit. It still doesn't make any sense.
Exactly.
And then it goes back to the fire. And the firefighters. And fire,
I'll let you deal with that,
night,
and we'll listen to another caller. 855-853-4802. Hi.
Hi, guys. My name's Zach. I'm from Northern California. My story takes place about 10 years ago. I was 10 years old, maybe 11, and my family was driving through the Delta of California from Sacramento towards Isleton. We were driving along the levee about to get into Isleton when the whole family on the side of the levee saw my uncle, who was a very tall, very distinguishable man, very easily recognized. He was very well known around the Delta. He was in charge of maintaining all the boat lifts. And we saw him very clearly and slowed down and waved to him, but he didn't look at us. He knew our car. We had seen him several times. He didn't look at us and just kept walking. And I don't really remember if he was walking or sort of floating, but he just seemed very distant. And we had gotten to my aunt's house. They were separated. And we were like, hey, we just saw him walking on the levee. And she was like, that's impossible. And she seemed very distraught and sad. And we were like, well, how is that impossible? We saw him. We knew it was him. And she goes, well, he committed suicide the day before we saw him. And his girlfriend was the one that found him. And it made absolutely no sense, but it was very obviously him. It could not have been anybody else. So a few days, maybe a week or two later, we were back home and I was in my bed when I thought that I had woken up and I was in complete sleep paralysis. And as my eyes were darting back and forth around the room, I noticed there was a knee-high fog just lingering around the room. And it was completely unexplainable, and it stayed there for several minutes. I could not move. I was in complete paralysis. And when I was trying to fight the sleep paralysis, I finally woke up, and the fog was gone. And I had told my parents about this, and my dad said that he experienced the same thing a few nights earlier, but never told anybody. So it was just unexplainable and must have been correlated in some way. And then just a few months later, I was still thinking about him quite frequently. And I had lights on either side of my bed on nightstands, and they were on a dimmer switch with a on and off switch at the bottom of the dimmer. And every night, right before bed, I'd go in my room, shut the door, dim the lights all the way down, and flip the switch off. Every night, very routinely, never missed a night. And I had woken up, it was about 2:45 in the morning, and the lights on the night tables were very dimly on. Not all the way bright, not all the way down, but below the middle setting. And it was, there was no way that I could have done it. I don't sleepwalk, I don't do anything like that, but it was very obvious that something had turned them on, and I knew it wasn't anyone in my family because my door locked from the inside and I locked it every night before bed. And that was 9 or 10 years ago, and it still haunts me to this day. I think about it all the time, and I've had a few other paranormal experiences, but I can call and talk about those another time.
Thank you for calling and sharing those experiences. That would be haunting. I mean, I granted, you know, not traumatic, but enough to make you go, there's something else out there. Something happened that's unexplained, and I don't have any way of rationalizing it.
When he talked about how the girlfriend found him, I just thought to myself, well, you know, some relationships can be a bit difficult to get out of. So, I mean, you know, fake your own death.
Have you ever attempted that? Have you ever faked your own death to get out of a relationship? That seems like something you might have done.
You know, that's going to be a to be continued on that.
Yeah, there's still plenty of time. So it's one of those things to kind of check off a bucket list of fake your own death to get out of a relationship. It's like, did that
skydiving, Grand Canyon, fake death to get away from stage 5 clinger.
Hey, anything is possible. That'll be an interesting story to tell.
A few years later, you see each other at Target in the produce section, and
oh my god! Whoa. And then the thing is, the person like never approaches you, and they write into the show going, "Oh my god, I saw my dead boyfriend buying Triscuits at Target." Like, yeah, that's common with people who are dead. They buy a lot of Triscuits. That's going to wrap up the program for today. If you like the show, keep us on the air. Become an EPP extra podcast person on our website, ghostpodcast.com. Get advanced episodes of the program, access to all those EPP bonus episodes, brand new ones every single week, new previews on Thursday. If you've not been listening to those, check them out. About 10, 15 minute previews of those. You can really get a great feel for how those episodes are produced now and the awesomeness of those stories. Should really give you some good reason to become an EPP. Ghostpodcast.com to do that. Until next time, for Sean, I'm Tony. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.